The Human Race is proudly brought to you by Elevate. Support babies' healthy development at every stage.
The Human Race podcast discusses subjects that will be upsetting for some, including infertility, miscarriage, and stillbirth. Support is available. Check the show description for details.
Kia ora and welcome to The Human Race, a podcast about those who are in the race of their lives to create a life. My name's Nadine Higgins. I'm a broadcaster, a journalist, and for the past 4 years and counting, I've been trying to make a baby with my husband.
That's me. I'm Dan. And we reckon infertility is lonely enough without making it a dirty little secret. So we wanted to bring you stories from those people that have been through it.
So even if you don't want to talk about it, maybe those stories can give you hope, or at the very least, make you feel a little less alone. This is a collab podcast between Stuff and Wabi Sabi Media.
In 2019, Shortland Street resident Dr. Harper Whitley gave birth to a baby boy called Billy. Viewers of New Zealand's favourite soap weren't to know that actress Rhea Vandevis was acting out a role she'd expected to be experiencing for real in lockstep with her character. Instead, she gritted her teeth and gave birth on screen just months after losing her own longed-for baby.
Rhea and her husband Chris, also known as Crashy, are our very good friends and explored every possibility and avenue to improve the chances of having a child over 6 long years. Rhea joins us now to talk about the journey. Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Kia ora, you two. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being here.
So Rhea, you are one of the only people I kind of know with a big public profile other than Nadine that is comfortable about getting out there and talking about fertility in the open, because lots of people don't like to talk about it.
Yeah, which, I don't know, I find to be kind of strange. It's just this taboo, but it's nothing to be ashamed of, and it is so common. So I didn't really want to suffer in silence and felt like, you know, I wanted to tell my story. And I love that you have too, Nutty.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're right, it's so lonely. And for you, so long, 6 years trying to have a baby, when it wasn't working for you naturally, did you have any idea as to why?
Yeah, well, before I met Chris, Crashy, I was living in Sydney and I'd stopped taking the contraceptive pill, not for any particular reason, just because I wanted to stop taking it. And I didn't get a period for 2.5 years after that. And so we started kind of doing some investigations to figure out why that might be. And the hospital in Sydney told me that I had polycystic ovarian syndrome. And it was this very blunt, abrasive doctor who I had, you know, had not seen before, who delivered the news to me like one morning before I was going off to set. It's just like, you have this, you'll probably never have a natural period again, and you'll probably never have a baby. I was like, oh. She's like, okay, see ya.
Great bedside manner.
Yeah, it was shocking, actually. And so how old was I then? Like, in my mid-20s?
My jaw is on the floor. How can you deliver news like that so casually?
I know. And it was a woman as well. I don't know. Just anyway, I was devastated, and then was recommended to see this naturopath who had also been diagnosed with polycystic ovarian syndrome, and she had got her periods back and also had 2 children. So she was just like, it's not, you know, not all hope is lost. Try this, so, you know, potions and all sorts. And then a diet, which was pretty much just fish and vegetables. So incredibly healthy.
Wow.
But 6 weeks later, literally 6 weeks later, I got a period again and got it regularly.
Wow.
So I kind of thought, solved that problem.
Yeah. Kids are back on the agenda.
Yeah, they're back on the agenda now. I just need a husband. Anyway, found
and
a husband.
Chris.
Yeah. And yeah, so then we, you know, started trying to have a baby, and it just wasn't working after months and months and months. I actually can't remember how long it was, but it was quite a while after, you know, since we'd started trying that we went to seek professional help, because we actually didn't have to wait that long to get on the public list, because we'd been trying for so long, if that makes sense. But initially, you know, we thought it was me maybe because of what they told me in Sydney. But then, you know, I had that ruled out here. I do also have endometriosis, which, you know, can play a part. But then Chris had his semen analysed, and they were ugly. Remember
is that a technical term?
That's what the doctor said.
Really?
Yeah, we were on a road trip. We were driving down, I can't remember, we were driving down to Taupo or something. And the phone rang. We're like, oh my God, we're expecting the results. Yeah. And I think I was driving. They rang my phone and Chris answered it. And then they were like, oh, actually, Chris, we want to talk to you. He put it on speaker. And he was like, yeah, your sperm, they're just incredibly ugly. Like, oh, you know, he sort of described it like they were chasing, you know, chasing their own tails and they had like multiple heads and just like.
You hear Dan's sharp intake of breath because I think he recognises it's a blow to your manhood when someone says something
totally.
Like that.
Yeah, well, I had a blockage in the vein in my ball bag and so I had surgery and got that clear.
Through your neck?
Yeah, through my neck, which what was the weirdest thing in the world. But then I did that and then I had to give another sample. And the doctor, we went and saw the doctor, and she's like, great sperm. And a thumbs up. And I was like, yes, I'm back.
Yes, back, baby. Well, that's the thing. Like, men can affect their sperm, you know? So Chris went from having, like, super ugly sperm to, like, very handsome sperm. And, like, not too, you know.
Beautiful A-grade.
Yeah, beautiful A-grade sexy sperm by doing simple things like not going in the spa pool and not wearing tight undies. And, you know, not drinking and doing all sorts of other things.
Doing all the things that you females have to do, like.
Exactly.
Sacrifice, I think it's called.
Not so easy when it comes to eggs, right?
Not so easy when it comes to eggs. We are born with all of the eggs we will ever have. If you have it, how does it work? If you have a daughter, then in your body are all of the eggs that your granddaughter will ever have. I think it's like a
Babushka
doll thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's women can't really do much to if your eggs are shit.
Just
your
a
eggs
bit
are a bit shit. And sadly, my eggs are a bit shit.
So he made some lifestyle changes. You're waiting for IVF to start, and then you kind of get a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, we did get a bit of a surprise. We fell pregnant naturally, which was a huge shock because it had been so long and we'd kind of realised by that point that it was probably my eggs. So it was a huge surprise.
It's like a miracle just all of a sudden.
Total miracle. I remember the day I was at work at Shortland Street and I went and did a pregnancy test in the toilet. My period must have been late. I didn't feel different or anything. And it was the day of the TV awards. So I had to go straight from work to the TV awards. And I kind of did it that morning or whatever. And like rang Chris. Didn't even get to see Chris. It was just like giddy with like, what the hell?
Hey, it's me. Guess what?
Guess what? So, you know, I went and sat through those awards and then quickly went home and like.
Which are normally a boozy affair, right? So you would have been like, oh, no, not for me.
Not for me. Yeah. So that was wildly exciting, and it coincided with the fact that my character on Shortland Street was also pregnant recently. So it was like, oh my God, this is so serendipitous. Wow. Yeah. For a while that was pretty awesome.
So did they write that in, or was that just a complete coincidence?
It was a complete coincidence.
Wow. How amazing.
Yeah. That show often imitates life. It's pretty weird.
At this point, you guys are excited going, oh my God, this is amazing. But then that didn't go down the road you wanted it to go. When did you kind of start getting that feeling things weren't quite right?
Well, we went to our 7-week dating scan, saw the heartbeat, you know, that was all lovely.
Then it starts to get real.
Yeah, so real. And I think, yeah, it really does start to get real. And I think Chris was a little bit detached from it all because it's, you know, it's not, as a guy, Dan, you know, it's like, it's not your body. So you're like, maybe a bit less invested or something, but in that scan, he was just like, holy hell, like, that is cool.
Kind of blows your mind, yeah?
Yeah.
Because at that early stage, like, I'm always like a little bit like, is it a real thing? Is it
a, it's just a clump of cells.
Yeah, what is it?
Yeah. Well, it's a clump of cells that was pulsating.
it was doing the beat.
That was pretty cool, and everything was kind of fine. We went along. We were over on Waiheke Island the week of our 12-week scan, so didn't quite make it to that.
Mm-hmm.
Had it booked in for like the Tuesday of my 13th week, And then on the Saturday night beforehand, we were out for dinner with some friends and I had a little bit of cramping and I went to the bathroom and had a little bit of spotting, started freaking out as you would, especially me. And then, rang my sister who was at med school at the time. I was like, oh my God, this is happening. What do you think I should do? She said, just don't panic, go to bed, try and get some sleep and, see how things are in the morning. And things kind of progressed. I mean, there wasn't a lot of blood or anything, but I was quite crampy through the night. And the next morning, she just said, I think just for your peace of mind, you should go to the hospital. But I'm sure it's fine, but just go to the hospital. So we went back to Auckland and went to Waitakere Hospital, actually. Sat in the waiting room there for most of the day. Sure.
While people are like, is that that guy from Shaun Street?
Yeah. Luckily, no one asked me for medical help. Yeah. But yeah, then they finally saw me and said they had pretty crude kind of scanning devices there. So they were like, we can't tell you with absolute certainty that there's no heartbeat, but we're pretty sure that there's no heartbeat and that you are losing the baby. But they were like, so just go home. So they just sent me home.
Wow.
And I was just like, I just felt like I was completely uninformed about anything.
So they just cut you loose to just go let nature take its course.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which, I mean, I don't know what the actual protocol is, but I have since spoken to people and they're like, that probably shouldn't have happened.
Blows my mind.
I went home and just over the next couple of days, nature kind of took its course and really, really painful, like period pain times just extreme period pain and just cramps and sort of over the toilet and, past the poor little thingy.
It's just devastating. Toilet.
Yeah.
It was devastating.
It was pretty shit.
Yeah. And yet at the same time, your character's pregnant.
Yeah.
So you have to go to work each day and what?
Strap on a belly. Yeah. A belly that just got progressively bigger over the next few months. And
what does that do to your mental state?
I don't know. It wasn't easy.
I can imagine.
I had to get pretty good at compartmentalizing stuff and just kind of going like, which actually, you should do anyway, but it's hard to not bring whatever work you do home, right?
Absolutely.
It was a pretty bizarre and not so great time emotionally, I would say.
Yeah. You kind of have to almost dissociate when it came to the giving birth bit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Luckily, there were characters like Jen Ludlam's Leanne there to kind of lighten the mood with the crystals and whatnot.
Every workplace needs one of those.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, so that was, it was incredibly difficult, but made.
You're made of tough stuff, Rhea.
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
And so then IVF starts for you and Crashy, and putting all your hope in science. And so tell us about the first two rounds, was it?
We did three rounds with my eggs. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, actually, well, the first round that we did, I was completely unprepared for the outcome, which was that I had no eggs to harvest. Like, at no point did any doctor say to me that is a possibility. So it was just not anything that I had even remotely considered. So that was, it really blindsided me. Mm. So I went through all the stimulation and then, you go and have your scans to see how things are developing. And they were like, it's not looking so good. And then, got to the kind of the end of the stimulation. They were like, there is actually nothing for us to attempt to even grab.
And you just think science is going to have the answers. So that must have just completely knocked you sideways.
It really did. It really did. Did anyone explain to you that that was a possibility
Never.
When you started?
No.
Yeah.
They're just like, we're going to have a look and see what the follicles are doing. Then we're going to harvest the eggs. Then we're going to fertilize them. And
if you go, there is a possibility that the follicles do nothing and there are no eggs.
Yeah, because it kind of be nice to have the bit of a heads up about that, right?
Yeah,
so you're
totally.
Not, so you're not lying there with your legs in the air and going, and they're like, yeah, nothing here.
Yeah,
thanks
nothing
for trying.
Here. Nothing to see here. Yeah, so that was a real shock, and that, yeah, just.
And so then what do you change for round two?
Well, everything. Tried everything. I mean, I feel like I tried everything. Just tried to be the healthiest person I could be. You know, read all these books and didn't touch receipts. And did you do that?
Yeah, I've started doing that. Yeah. I didn't initially. But I mean, when I don't want to put too fine a point on it, but you did all of the things. And some of the things you did, I feel like I need to ask you about. What is vaginal steaming and what is it supposed to do?
Okay. Vaginal steaming. It's a little bit woo-woo, but when you're desperate, you're desperate.
Absolutely.
You try everything. So it's like imagine like a toilet seat that instead of having like a bowl of cold water underneath it has got a little pot of boiling water that is filled with like herbs and things.
Okay.
And so, you know, they pop this pot in a little, like latch little cupboard, pop it in there, you pop your little fanny on top. Be careful you don't get burned.
I was going to say, does it get too steamy?
Steam is hot. Yeah, so some, you know, you have to sometimes get up and like pace around the room a little bit if it's getting a
let
little
it cool
intense.
Down.
Let it cool down. But it's supposed to, God, I don't know, it's supposed to sort of just like clean all of the mucusy stuff out, which, you know, some people say is actually really important to have. So who knows?
It feels like something Gwyneth Paltrow would sell you.
Yeah, she probably would. She probably would.
Right.
Well, another thing that I did do was a lipiodal flush, which is actually based in medicine. And that's when they put like poppy seed oil up into your fallopian tubes and kind of shunk it around. Just to make sure that everything's kind of functioning properly and they flush through. And apparently, I mean, I was kind of part of a study for that, but apparently it has, I think it's a Kiwi guy that's pioneered it over the last kind of 20 years, but apparently there is some success with helping improve people's fertility afterwards. But
did it make any difference in the next round?
In the next round, I mean, who knows? I tried a different like drug protocol. So who that might have made the difference. But also I think like I maybe got like too healthy. I lost too much weight. I was too – you need a bit of something on your body, I think.
Mm.
And I can become an obsessive person and that is not healthy for anything. So
– I just kind of I keep getting frustrated. I keep saying it to Nadine that – you try these things like you're saying, maybe you did too much of this thing or not enough of that. And there's no, and I feel like it's all science based, but they don't have an answer. They're like, every woman's body's different.
Yeah. It might help, but then again, it might not.
It's just unexplained fertility.
Oh, the worst
like,
phrase
that's
in the world.
Diagnosis?
You're like,
and then, explain it to me.
And then they're like, check or savings.
Yes.
So the next round, I think you get two.
Well, yeah, so
two eggs.
After that first round where I got no eggs, because my body was technically like primed with all of the drugs, even though there were no eggs there to be harvested, or maybe there was like one follicle and they were like, but it's just not worth it.
Mm.
I tried IUI,
mm-hmm.
which is like artificial insemination, basically. So they just inseminated me with a...
They just put the semen up near the egg.
Yes.
Right?
With like a big
eyedropper
kind of thing.
And hope that the two of them will find each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then they sort of encourage, around that time, they sort of like, have lots of sex, all that kind
of
stuff.
The most romantic kind.
The most romantic kind.
Scheduled
Chris
sex.
Chris really liked that it was like prescribed by the doctor.
Yeah. And you have to put out tonight, the doctor
exactly.
said.
But it did actually mean that he missed the funeral of one of his friend's mums because he was like, I can't leave. We've got to have sex. We've got to have sex.
He took his job very seriously.
Stickler for the rules, is it?
He is. He's like, can I have that in writing? But yeah, no, that didn't work either. But we just, you know, put it on the credit card. But yeah, so the next round, I think we got two eggs and then
neither of them fertilized.
Oh, so slightly further along the process. Slightly, but like just still not there.
Incrementally so, but just, yeah. So really, really gutting, as you know. And then the third round we tried, I stopped all of the mad, you know, health stuff. In fact, we went to Wellington together the weekend before, yeah. Didn't we? We had a
rather fun time.
Did you know that 1 in 4 people in Aotearoa, New Zealand, experience infertility? And it can be an incredibly challenging journey. Surgery, tests, drugs, specialists, diet. Many people try many things to give themselves a fighting chance of having a baby. Elevate is a preconception and pregnancy multivitamin and mineral supplement. It's specifically formulated to help meet the increased nutritional needs of women trying to conceive and those fortunate enough to get pregnant. Elevate is available at leading pharmacies. For more information, head to elevate.co.nz.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At what point did you start to think, okay, maybe my eggs are not going to get us there? We need to look at other options.
I think from the first round, really, it wasn't looking great. And the doctors kind of led me to believe that, you know, trying a different stimulation method might have a big impact. And so when it didn't, I think I was kind of like, yeah. It's probably not going to happen. They recommended, you know, that we try egg donation. They said we could have tried another round with my eggs and might have got lucky.
But it's pretty emotionally taxing, isn't it?
It really is. So we did the third round we did with my eggs. We got one, and we may have got more than one egg, but then one fertilized. So we got one embryo. And then that, you know, we implanted that, but that didn't stick.
How do you just keep going through all of that?
I don't know, just head down, bum up, keep going. Try not to think about it too much. We got to a point, well, I guess we had to, where we were just like, this cannot define us and our life is good and fine if this doesn't happen for us. You've got to be pragmatic, I think, and it wasn't looking like it was going to work. So, yeah, we were advised to go down the egg donation route. Mm.
And so at what point do your sisters say, I want to help you?
Yeah. So actually my sister Zena was the first one to put her hand up. And she is just a couple of years younger than me. She had a son of her own at the time. So we kind of looked into that, but she got her AMH levels tested as well, which is sort of part of the initial screening kind of thing. And her levels were really low, which was a surprise to her. And so they were like, you're not a candidate for it, which was really gutting.
Yeah. But then devastating for her because she wants to help so much as well.
Yeah, totally. Luckily it hasn't affected her fertility in any way. It's so weird. Like, why is that a thing?
Yeah.
Then she, you know, like tried to have her second baby and just got pregnant immediately.
Most confusing thing in the world is how it works.
Yeah. That's why we're here, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, then my sister Lottie, beautiful Lottie, she volunteered her eggs too, even though she doesn't have kids of her own yet, and she just really wanted to help. So I'm very lucky.
So you've got these beautiful, healthy embryos on ice. You're about to have the transfer, and you must have been feeling so hopeful. But then the universe just delivers you this one more curveball.
Yeah, just because I needed another one.
So what happened?
Well, I was at the GP for some reason and he noticed that my glands were up slightly. And, I mean, I wasn't feeling unwell, but he was like, he knew I was about to do an embryo transfer and he was like, let's just, I'm sure it's nothing, but let's just test and make sure that you don't have toxoplasmosis, which is, you know, pretty fine if you are not trying to have a baby. But it can, I think, cause like brain defects if Ooh. You are pregnant. And sure enough, I had it.
Oh, my goodness.
Who knows how or why. But, yeah, so that meant I had to delay it for another 6 months.
Oh, so just at the end of a very long journey.
Yes.
Just add another 6 months.
Exactly. But, yeah, if you don't laugh, you cry. And I just kind of went, the universe is telling me something. The time hasn't been right yet. You know, you just kind of got to look at it that way.
That's very philosophical. Mm.
You've got to be like that, though, I think.
Yeah, well, you go crazy otherwise, right?
Yeah.
Just go down a dark hole.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did it take much getting your head around not using your eggs and then using Lottie's?
Yeah, it did. Well, to be honest, I wanted a baby so much that for me, I came around to it quite quickly.
Mm.
I think for Chris, it took a little longer. The fact that, you know, I have very similar DNA to my sisters was also a bonus. But, you know, I've since learnt that even if you have no DNA in common with your egg donor, your baby is still likely to have, you know, your traits because of epigenetics and all that kind of stuff. It's quite amazing.
Well, it's lived inside you for 9 months.
Yeah, well, it's been grown by your flesh and blood and, yeah. Which makes perfect sense, really. But, yeah, I mean, there was a whole lot of counselling that you have to go through. I guess my initial kind of fear, which was completely unfounded, was that Lottie would have some sort of, like, ownership over any baby that was born if it was – but it's absolutely not like that. And, yeah, she's an awesome auntie.
Because it worked.
Yes.
It worked. Yeah. But I'm so interested to know that given everything you'd been through, especially with that first miscarriage, at what point after getting that positive pregnancy result, which is I think what happened after the weekend in Wellington, were you able to actually be like, yay, this is actually happening versus terrified that it might not stick around?
Yeah. It's both of those things. I think they can exist at the same time.
Yeah.
I don't think I stopped being terrified until he was born.
Oh, my gosh. You know?
But I'm a worrywart. You know me. Anxiety, Lane and Lady. But, yeah, no, it was unbelievable when we got the call to say that it had stuck because I just had psyched myself up to, you know, receive the call that it hadn't because we'd had that call so many times. So, yeah, was in disbelief.
After struggling, hearing lots of people's other happy news of, you know, being pregnant and all that sort of stuff, was it hard to share your happy news? Was there trepidation around
Yeah,
that?
Massive trepidation because I'd been in, you know, in the position of all, you know, it's such a horrible journey that I didn't want to rub it in anyone's face because
you know what that feels like.
Totally.
And you always are happy for other people, but then it's like that little.
Yeah, totally. So, yes, massive trepidation. But also I hoped that by sharing, like, the trials that we'd been through, that might inspire hope for some people. You know, 6 years is a long time to keep at it. And, you know, if we'd given up at 5 years, we wouldn't have our little Ted. So keep at it.
And he's so beautiful.
He really is.
He's just over one now?
Yeah.
Do you still look at him and catch yourself and go, holy, you're here?
I do. And it just gets better and better, honestly. Like, he's just becoming his own little person and it's just...
Even though he's not sleeping at the moment.
Yeah, he's never really been a fan of that.
I don't know about anybody else, but I feel like
given we're in the midst of this journey, I need to hear the stories about how phenomenal it is. Because lots of people go to you, oh, well, you can have my kids, or thank goodness you didn't have kids during lockdown or whatever. And you're like, no, I need you to tell me that they're a complete miracle and that all of this heartbreak is completely worth it.
Oh, honestly, Nadine, it is. It is. You're going to get there.
Yes.
You're going to get there.
Sometimes I think it's like a big conspiracy, though, that it, you know, everyone that has a child just is like, then they've got the child and they're like, oh, it's really hard work. Let's get another one. Let's get somebody else in here to have a child as well. It's like a cult.
Yeah, totally.
I think it's common for a lot of couples. You know, they deal with things differently. What sort of impact did the stress of trying to create a baby have on your relationship?
Oh my God, it's been so hard. I think, even though I just said having a baby is the most amazing thing ever, the stress on our relationship has been the greatest since he's been born. And I mean, it just changes your life so much. But I think we kind of had underestimated the stress that we were under and like kind of the trauma that we'd been through for all of those years of trying to get there. Now that we're there, obviously having no sleep is not good for anybody. It is really tough.
It's almost like you're dealing with the after effects of 6 years of chronic stress, and then you throw in some sleep deprivation and doing this brand new job of being a parent, and it's like a recipe for it to be hard.
It is an absolute recipe for it to be hard. And you just, you know, you're not meeting each other anymore. You're talking about like logistics, and you know, you've got to really work to find the love. Well, we are anyway. Yeah.
Is it? And I mean, look, guys are notoriously bad at sharing their feelings, and I mean, I'm pretty cheerful. Like when we've been going through hard times and this whole fertility thing, I sometimes run away and hide. And by run away and hide, I go out and drink and don't come home till late.
And I sit home and cry.
Yeah, I think we've talked about how it's quite a common theme here.
I guess it's just I do find it quite hard to. It's not that I don't want to talk about my feelings, but it's almost like I'm just caging it off. And
sure, and I think Chris. Like I alluded to earlier, like it all kind of is happening to the woman. It's like happening to our bodies, happening to, I mean, our minds as well. And I think that Chris, I don't know, just felt a little bit sidelined some of the time. And it's understandable why, you know, they...
Well, it becomes an obsession, right? You want to control all the controllables in this process where so much is out of your control that it just occupies every little corner of your brain.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think he says, you know, because I was obsessing about it so much, he was like, one of us had to kind of not. Mm. It's been very hard.
Yeah.
But I feel like we're finding our way back to each other now.
That's so good.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
That's so good. Yeah. And so you've got Teddy now, so you've got your happy ending story.
Happy ending.
I know during those years it was really tough. And currently for us, you know, we're going through that. And sometimes the happy ending doesn't seem like it is in sight or will be there. How do you stay hopeful and ride that roller coaster?
I don't know, asking for a friend. Yeah, totally. I don't know that we... I mean, there was an element of hope, of course, but sometimes I feel like we just kind of expected that we were never going to get there. You just lower your expectations massively.
But if you think you're never going to get there, what makes you keep, you know, injecting yourself and sacrificing things and shelling out cash?
Yeah. I guess it's just, you know, hoping for the best but preparing for the worst, you know? Because it's completely out of your control. It's like it's largely a luck thing, right? It seems. And there's nothing you can do, no matter what. You can work as hard as you want at anything. There's nothing you can do to help.
It does feel like a lottery.
It's a lottery.
Yeah.
It's a lottery.
So we've reached the finish line of the human race. And at this point... we ask all of our guests the same four questions, just to find out a few of the nuggets that you might have gleaned over a really long, hard period. Mm-hmm. So question one, and I love this one because I've got a lot of answers for it. Mm-hmm. People love to try and be helpful when you're struggling to conceive. And maybe if they've managed to conceive themselves, they consider themselves experts. So I'm kind of keen to know, what is the worst thing that someone said to you during the fertility process, or the most unhelpful piece of advice?
Oh gosh, there's probably heaps of them. Everyone just always tells you just to relax, you know, just relax, just forget about it, put it out of your mind and it'll happen. It's like, no, it won't. There's something medically going wrong here. Yeah, that wound me up so much. And I feel like everybody said that.
Mm.
What about you?
Someone once said to me, are you having lots of sex? And I was like, oh, shit, is that how babies are made? Why didn't someone mention it?
Someone said to me once, oh, kids really aren't all they're cracked up to be.
Oh,
just give up now. They're really awful. You have to change nappies and stuff.
Yeah.
Horrible ones.
Oh, someone else also said, maybe you're just too busy. And I was like, thanks. That's also not helpful because I have to earn a living. So
now you make me feel bad for having a job and doing.
Oh my god! Is it my fault?
It's my business. I already feel like it's my fault.
Yeah.
Right. Question two. What's the number one thing you'd say to someone who's struggling with the journey right now, and perhaps you wish you'd known on the outset?
I would just say, don't give up. Try and stay happy. Keep lines of communication open with your partner is really important. And ask for help. Tell people, you know, if you're struggling, speak up, because it can be super, super lonely and you don't want to do it alone. I didn't want to do it alone. Yeah. I needed my friends. Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing advice.
What about what you would tell someone who is supporting someone like you to go through the process? A lot of people don't know. This is question three, by the way. What would you say to someone who is supporting someone going through the process?
Don't tell them to relax. Don't tell them to relax and it'll just happen. Yeah, look, just be there. Be an ear and a shoulder, you know?
And less of the trite advice.
Yeah. Yeah. That's that simple.
Question four. Now, lots of the process, super heartbreaking, obviously, and there can be lots of awkward bits that go along when you're doing things, and funny bits as well. Any memorable, hilarious moments that Crashy or you had?
Look. Crashy has lots of tales to tell about the little manila folders in the masturbation chambers.
Masturbation chambers.
I think they've stopped providing those since COVID. He'll be very disappointed to know.
You
have to BYO device.
And, you know, the rushing across town with a little specimen jar of semen in your armpit to try and keep it the right temperature.
Oh, God.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
I didn't find much of it very funny, to be honest.
Like, I'm in the trenches.
I'm in the
working
trenches.
Away here.
Yeah. Yeah. What
it's easier probably to find it hilarious when your job is to jerk off in a
room with a manila folder.
There's a lot of pressure on, you know. You don't know if you don't want to come out of the room too soon. You don't want to be in there too long. You don't want to see the same nurse you've seen before.
One of my funny moments was the drugs they gave me the first time I had an egg extraction. I'd been told they were really good, and I actually quite like going under a general anaesthetic because it's
actually.
I don't want to sound like a druggie, but it's a good time. And someone had said, I think that you don't form memories. And so I was like, I'm definitely going to remember this. And I said to the nurse, who knows why, you've given me truth serum. Ask me anything.
Dean Higgins doing an AMA.
And I think Dan was like, shh.
Enough out of you.
You got to look for the humour where you can find it.
Absolutely.
Look, thank you so much for being so honest and open. I think it's so brave of you. You know, you've got such a high profile. It's so powerful to show people that there's hope. And I've certainly taken a lot of hope from your journey. So thank you, and we love you lots.
It's my pleasure. Love you too. And I'm here for you.
Thank you.
Get there.
Love you guys.
You've been listening to The Human Race, a podcast from Wabi Sabi Media and Stuff.
Follow the show on Apple, Spotify, or any other podcast app.
And please leave a review. It helps other people discover this important content.
You can also listen at stuff.co.nz/thehumanrace.
We'd also love to hear from you. Email thehumanrace@stuff.co.nz and follow us at facebook.com/thehumanracenz or on Insta @thehumanracenz.
The Human Race was produced by me, Dan Higgins.
And me, Nadine Higgins.
Audio editing and mixing by John Ropeha.
The associate producer was Jen Black.
And executive producer was Chris Reed.
Thanks very much for listening.
That was The Human Race, which was proudly brought to you by Elevate. Support babies' healthy development at every stage.
Always read the label, follow the directions for use. Vitamin and mineral supplements are not a substitute for a balanced diet. If you have a baby with a neurotube defect or spina bifida, seek specific medical advice. Bayer New Zealand Limited, Auckland.
Kia ora, Aotearoa, and welcome to The Big Stuff Quiz. I'm your host, Imogen Wells, alongside my assistant, the wonderful Chris Reid.
Hello, everyone.
Each week, we'll release a new episode to test your wits with two rounds of 10 questions. One potluck round and another that's very loosely themed.
A bit tangential, even.
Such a good word. If you think you're up for the challenge, go and follow our show on your favourite podcast platform. The Big Stuff Quiz is out now.
The Big Stuff Quiz is proudly brought to you by Melbourne. Every bit different.